Welcome to Conversations with Margot Anand, with your host, Diana Owens. In this interview, Diana Owens talks with Margot Anand about the Tantra lifestyle, the Dalai Lama, anger, power issues between men and women, and cultivating peace in our sexual-spiritual relationships.
It is my privilege and pleasure to introduce my teacher and workshop facilitator and friend, who is Margot Anand. Margot has facilitated the workshop I just completed called The Art of Sexual Ecstasy for Women Over 45. We had a wonderful 9 days of personal sharing and bathing in the wisdom and the personal example that Margot shared through her stories and her teaching and through her life. I grew to respect her as a wonderful teacher and a woman who is teaching me and so many people how growing older is growing better. I think that you show how to live and to love in such a juicy and wonderful way, Margot. I'm just so pleased and proud to have you share your wisdom and your wit with us tonight.
Wonderful. Thank you. I'm honored.
Well, thank you so much. And I know that you have just gotten back from a wonderful time with Tony Robbins, where he was working with 27 couples and talking about ultimate passion. And then you were doing this in Fiji. And then you also are working on your a book that is out, I think, called...
It's just coming out in the fall.
Okay, 8 Secrets to a Great Love Life. So you are one busy woman and certainly have a lot of wisdom to share with us.
Thank you.
Yes, so I'd actually like to start, if it's okay with you, with just some basics to help our listeners have a frame of reference in listening to you. You have several books out, The Art of Sexual Ecstasy, The Art of Sexual Magic, The Art of Orgasm, and The Art of Everyday Ecstasy. These books talk about Tantra, and you have your own school of Tantra called Sky Dancing Tantra. So would you please just start with what you experience as the meaning of Tantra, and then what's unique about your own Sky Dancing school of Tantra?
Well, the meaning of Tantra, you know, there's many meanings to the word Tantra. The root Sanskrit word is expanding and weaving. And I give a broad definition that says, choose with awareness what brings you joy and it opens the door to your spirit. Mm. And so this is a general philosophy or perspective of Tantra, which says that you grow through choosing consciously what brings you pleasure, because then your spirit feels welcome in your body and your heart sings. And this applies to sensuality, it applies to love, it applies to how you lead your daily life, it applies to your conversations, whether you choose to focus on problems or on appreciations about what does work in your life. It applies to many, many different things, because Tantra is actually a philosophy and a spiritual path like yoga or Zen. The only difference is that it includes sexuality as a door to awakening in its dimension, whereas most of the other spiritual paths say that we have to give up or transcend sex.
Ah.
So here in Tantra, and specifically in Sky Dancing Tantra, it explains that the very height of the orgasmic experience is actually like a meditation, because it propulses you to a place which is beyond your ego or personality or your do's and don'ts or your mental interferences. You're just simply totally present in the now and in a great big flow of energy carried by your breath, and your pleasure brings you to a paroxysm of intense energy. And when you let go totally, you have a glimpse of the ecstatic dimension and the glimpse of your connection to God and to Goddess. So in that sense, it is said that in the ancient Vedic texts, the Vedic seers and the yogis of old actually had the first notion of spiritual enlightenment when they practiced, you know, orgasmic lovemaking, and they developed the yoga of love. So, you know, there is a very deep link between lovemaking and meditation, which most people haven't a clue about in this country and in this culture. And most people who pretend to teach Tantra don't even practice. You know? So it's... we don't have a lifestyle now in America which actually really allows us to practice Tantra to the fullest.
What do you mean, Margot?
Well, you know, the tantric yogic path, if it's really practiced, requires easy 5 hours. When I get together with my tantric beloveds, you know, we start with food and, you know, the way we cook the food. And then when the food is ready, we go to yoga, and we have to find the right environment to practice yoga and the yoga asanas that are specifically awakening sexual energy. And then, you know, we practice meditation, facing each other, seeing each other as divine. And, you know, then we bless each other and we invoke the spirit in each other's bodies. And, you know, there's many, many steps that teach us erotic devotion and honoring of each other and bringing the divine archetype into our mind and heart, so that when we look at our partner, we can see Shiva, we can see Shakti, we can see the Godhead. And so when we are able to do that, suddenly our whole perspective on who we're looking at and how we address them shifts, and we see in them all the infinite potential that they carry within themselves. Because God, to me, means simply a being or an existence of an intelligence that has infinite ability to create. So the infinitely creative is manifesting itself through this body and this being at this time. And the more we know how to play with this energy consciously, you know, the more the divine is going to be delighted to manifest itself.
I love what you're saying, and I'm getting a little bit overwhelmed already with thinking now, where am I going to find that 5 hours of time to devote to these steps? So is that what you mean by America isn't ready for Tantra?
Yeah, I think that it's a good thing, whatever's happening, because America needs to have, you know, more education about ecstatic sexuality, because we come from a Judeo-Christian tradition in which, you know, the flesh and the spirit were divided and even in opposition. And it was said that the body was the abode of evil instincts, and we had to control it and control our sexual instincts in order to know God. So the fact that we now realize that this is not like that, and that sexuality can be a prayer, can be felt as a wonderful gesture of love and adoration and awakening, you know, requires some intense educational efforts. You know,
well,
most people don't have a clue about doing it this way.
The critique I've heard about Tantra is that it's just an excuse for getting off sexually.
Yeah, that's so, because America doesn't understand the whole notion of sexuality being sacred. America has sexuality plugged into a dimension of guilt and greed and desire and Playboy magazines and pornography, and these are all the results of that eminent guilt, you know, and repression of sexual energy, which exists in this puritanical culture. So sexual energy can never be repressed, because it's at the root of life and it's at the root of creativity. If there wasn't for sexual energy, there wouldn't be a single animal, insect, plant, or human being on this planet. So, you know, the idea of repressing it and channeling it, you know, according to certain acceptable channels is a good and worthy cause, but you know, to repress it is never going to work. You just need to look at what happens to the Catholic priests and the 180 cases of sexual abuse that are currently happening in the Catholic Church, who still doesn't want to include women into the whole equation.
So actually what I'm hearing you say is that our sexual energy becomes a vehicle to transport us into the spiritual realms?
Yeah, I mean, you see, it's a very delicate matter. I'm speaking from a high perspective here. I'm not speaking to try to get, you know, the common mortal educated about the orgasmic process, because quite frankly, I am so bored with talking about that. I've done it for 20 years.
Yeah.
You know? What I'm interested right now is to tell people, go to my teachers, you know, listen to what my teachers, the people who train with me, who are certified teachers, Michael and Marilyn and Stephen Lokita, and they will tell you all about this. But what came to mind is a conference I recently did in the context of the Dalai Lama's, His Holiness, the leader of the Tibetan people in Tibet, who is now living in India in Dharamsala, and who is a very respected and revered world teacher. So he was presenting an incredibly tantric ritual called the Kala Chakra Transmission to 5,000 people or 10,000 people in Toronto recently, and I gave a conference parallel to that. And then I attended all the transmissions, and actually there was a tantric ritual, a complete tantric ritual, very close to, you know, the kinds of practices and processes I'm teaching, in which it was very clearly explained to people that, yes, do make love, but first of all, choose the right partner. Choose a partner who is in the same lineage as you are, in the same spiritual practice, in the same direction, and make love not because you want to satisfy some, you know, greedy need or instinct the way we want to sneeze and relieve ourselves of pressure or attention. Make love in a way that you're not attached to the orgasmic release, and you pluck the energy of pleasure to transform it as a motor or a vehicle to enter into emptiness, which is the very nature of consciousness itself, which is the nature of awakening to the presence of your being, okay?
Yeah.
So that's why at the highest level, the practices that I teach are about the art of disappearing inside each other. Because when partners have really known how to tune in with each other, which is an art in itself, which requires a body that is at ease and can move and change positions easily, so yoga helps, and it also requires the art of breathing. There is orgasmic breathing as opposed to mental breathing. Orgasmic breathing is deep and slow and happens through the mouth and goes all the way to the sex. And have also mastered the art of moving together, the art of looking in each other's eyes and connecting soul to soul, and the art of letting go deeply with each other. So trusting in the heart, which is also important. And, of course, clear communication. So all these wonderful skills are things that partners have to hone into. It's an art. It's an education. It's a practice. It doesn't just come just like that. And so when people have mastered this, they make love in a completely different way, which allows them actually to, once their sexual organs are in contact with each other and they pick up the sensation of that pleasure with their breath and their micro-movements, then they can transform lust into bliss, and they can disappear beyond the mind into a very vast cosmic consciousness, which allows them to come in touch with their true nature.
It's like, as I listen to you, I have a path with which to use my body to connect to my soul.
Yes.
So that there's a tremendous, I love the definition of Tantra as weaving, and how well you weave, you teach us all to weave our body and our mind and our soul together to create one fabric, and then give us these practices with which to navigate our path.
Yes, 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 exactly. Well put.
Well, thank you so much. You're working on 8 Secrets to a Great Love. Okay, would you tell us about that and how that relates to what you're talking about with all of the practices to transform energy into us, into spirituality?
Well, I would say that the first of these 8 secrets is the art of flowing. That is the ability to let go of the past and to be fully present moment to moment to what's happening with your partner. And that's the secret of being in the flow. So you know how often we have unspoken resentments and different blocks in our hearts that we don't want to share. and mental interpretations of what our partner does and that it means this or that, and that triggers contractions in the heart because it reminds us of our mother or our father or some old wound that we carry.
Yes.
And so we don't express that because we're very busy and we're running, you know, our daily life. And then we're surprised in the process that after a while there is no more flow with our sexual energy or our desire. And it's often because we are not able to let go of the past. We have accumulated frustrations, unspoken frustrations, and we have forgotten that truth is erotic, and that when we speak our truth, we take a chance, of course, to be rejected or not to be understood. But if we have if we are communicating with a partner who is in love with us and who is intelligent, then that will be a challenge for the two partners to grow beyond the predicament that they're into, you know.
Yeah.
So that's why, in a way, it's erotic because it's challenging and it pushes you to grow.
Mm.
So then the second secret is awakening the wild self.
Ah, I like that one.
Yeah. And it teaches that in each of us there is a wild man and a wild woman who actually delight in the power of expressing wildness in a non-aggressive way, or even if it's aggressive, to do it in a playful way and not to hurt the other, but just to do it through laughter and through screaming and dancing and jumping and doing dynamic meditations together, or doing a lot of, you know, dancing and rock dancing and barking and meowing and, you know, gibberish and sounds and pushing each other's shoulders back and forth. And so that there is a tremendous power in this ability that we practice in this way to let loose. It's sort of a preliminary preparation in the ability to let loose in the orgasmic response.
It's so interesting because I think we're taught in our daily lives and especially in our work lives to do the opposite, to repress, hold in, act professional, act appropriate, etc. And so to have the opportunity to let go and be wild, as you say, sounds wonderful and challenging.
Yes, 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 because we have a hard time doing that in this culture because there's so much violence associated to sex. So, you know, whenever someone's get really loose and angry, it's difficult. Like I just had, you know, a wonderful therapy session with my partner, and you know, the whole question of me having once chosen to be a total bitch and really let loose for 3 hours at the end of some kind of moment in our lives where there was definitely a hurt on my part and I was feeling, you know, contracted and hurt, and often we express our hurt with tremendous amount of anger. And I'm for one that believes, according to the French way and the European way, that to really let loose and to allow myself as a woman to be once in a while a total bitch is actually a great way of checking whether my partner has balls and can really stand up to this power, you know?
Yes.
And so if you have to do with a man who's afraid of you, or who's afraid of his mother, or who's afraid of the memory of his mother, or who's afraid of anger because nobody ever raised their voice in his family, or, you know, who doesn't know how to deal with it, or who feels too tender, it's not going to work very well. They're going to resent it. They're going to run away. They're going to feel upset. But if you have a partner that knows their power and is able to just face you and growl and response and attack and scream just at the same level at which you're doing it, without touching each other, but just for the sheer enjoyment of making noise together, it becomes a tremendous heart opener. You know, you end up doing that with laughter because you've catharted it out.
I'm interested, Bill, in what you think about what Margo's saying from your perspective as a man.
Well, that was my question. I think it's fascinating that this association between sex and violence, I've really never understood it. And I you know, I'm sure it comes from primitive parts of the animal soul, but...
Yes.
I'd love for you to comment more on that, Margo, because it sounds like you're trying to bring the energy back, but at the same time bring the safety.
I'd like to say something about that before Margo gets involved. The energy centers in the brain, the sexuality and the anger center are very close together. They're situated close in the brain. So as when we get angry, we also can start feeling sexual and feeling our sexual and our love energy.
Yes, that's why before they make love, often when they get ready to make love, partners end up having a huge quarrel because their resistances, you know, and their armoring that they hold themselves tight into to control their daily life is suddenly softening up. And so their wildness comes out, and of course all the little gremlins and the little demons that have been kept at bay are now having a field day coming out and, you know, letting loose. So Osho, one of my great tantric teachers in India, said, you cannot be orgasmic in love if you don't know how to be orgasmic in anger.
I think it's important, though, to have anger expressed in certain ways. I am not interested in my partner dumping their anger on me as much as with their expression of anger. I can really respect that and appreciate that, but I don't want it dumped on me in a blameful, destructive way where they put me down or...
I agree, but what I'm saying is that if once in a while someone has a catharsis where they just lose it and they completely let it out, I personally am one, having been an encounter group leader in Germany and Europe for 3 years, I'm one that relishes this kind of amazing, you know, purification, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting to know that there are people there are certain populations in the Himalayan, highest Himalayan plateaus. I saw a friend of mine did a film on that, who have this huge catharsis among all members of the tribe once a year at the New Year. On one end of this divide on this mountain, all the women gather. On the other end, facing the women with a divide in between, the men gather. And after having drunk a few good drinks, they do this dance with the drums, and they completely attack each other. Why did you go with this one, and what did you do? And, you know, and everybody lets loose, and they have a huge dance, and they sort of have a mock fight, and they... you know, have the drums going, and they have, and then after that they go and have a celebration, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing that in this culture I feel we have distorted. You know, we don't know the joyful power of anger well released and well expressed.
Well, it's interesting because I think men in the American culture have more permission to get angry, and women have more permission to be sad and hurt. So I think as a woman I have less experience as well as maybe less opportunity to really get angry in a cathartic, strengthening way. And I agree, it's important to do that. When I do it, I really feel empowered. And yet, with my primary partner, when I have one, it's scary because there is that fear of, well, what will he think and how will he act? And like you say,
it can only happen in a very sort of protected and controlled environment. It just can't happen just like that. But anyway, part of awakening the wild self in my workshop is something we did in the women's workshop, which is expressing Kali. If you remember, there was a morning meditation where all the women were invited to actually express the Kali within themselves, which was all the anger of the world that had gathered in their belly from all the ways that the women of the world are being treated and all the wounds that they have accumulated. And they had a chance to dance it out, to scream it out, and everybody said it was very important for them and they really loved it. So that kind of ability to awaken the wild self in a way which is not attacking of the other, but which is simply expressing the delight in the power of wideness is something that helps us to let loose, you know, and to feel okay about it.
I agree.
And that's the second secret. And then the third is laughter, humor, and celebration in love, because we take sexual matters way too seriously.
Mm.
And sex can be a feast, and the best orgasms end in laughter. And laughter itself is a form of orgasmic release. So we celebrate laughter and humor in the erotic context, and we want great lovers to be great clowns.
Ah. That brings up some images.
Yeah.
That's really been my experience, that the best orgasms end in laughter. I've really experienced that. Is that very common, Margo?
Yeah, well, you see, because when someone really opens up and releases, there is a connection between the sexual center, the belly, and the heart, and when that connection really opens, then laughter happens. It's a natural expression of that connection.
And all right, so that's normal.
Yeah. How blissful indeed. Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, it's there because it allows us to be in the position of the witness to kind of delight in the energy and to, you know, also watch it and to be in and out of it. And so it's very, very wonderful. And then the next secret is mastering the power of love. And that's understanding that there needs to be a balance between power and acceptance. Like, you know, if both lovers are in their power in the right way, that means that they trust themselves and they have a good sense of self-esteem, so that whatever the other is doing is not necessarily going to wipe them off, you know, the face of the earth. You know, then they don't get destroyed if their partner is either attacking or having a hard time or critical or whatever. They know that it's their stuff and that they still can go on loving themselves. And so mastering the power of being, you know, truly standing in the power of who you are and at the same time having acceptance is very linked, because the more I have a sense of my own power and my own self-acceptance, the more I can also allow myself to accept my partner how they are, and also the more I can trust that I can surrender, which is really letting go in my partner's arms without feeling I'm going to lose my sense of being in charge of myself or of my life. So it's knowing that we deserve the very best in sexual loving and are prepared to give the best also. And it requires this deep sense of self-esteem, self-acceptance of who we are, regardless of what the other says or does.
It's interesting. It sounds to me like you're talking so much about how we live our lives as well as how we love sexually. So it sounds like there's so many lessons we can learn through studying sexuality and focusing on sexuality, how many lessons we can learn about life itself.
Yeah, it's very connected, you know, how we accept energy and move with it. And like, for instance, I also teach one of the secrets is this secret of sexual connection and how a deep sexual connection has so much to do with sexual communication. You know, how we need to speak to each other during the act of love, before and after, in very, very specific ways that are enhancing the experience and not cutting it off. And there's all sorts of little tips and tricks that are wonderful that many, that often people don't think about. For instance, if a man is making love to a woman, it's very, very good for a woman if he asks her before he penetrates, may I come in and visit? So she's, in a way, deciding whether she's ready to have her body penetrated. And then it's also very helpful if the man asks her, is it okay now if I come, or if I have an orgasm, or can I now leave the garden? Can I leave the sacred garden? Meaning now is it time for me to retire, you know, to leave your body. And also to close the door after he's left, like to take very softly the palm of his hand and lay it on the yoni or the sex of the woman, to allow her to get back into her own energy, because she was very open and she was filled up by someone else and now she needs to find herself again, you know. So these are little things that are nothing, but they make the entire difference for a woman between a clumsy lover and a great lover.
Well, I think you're talking about the power of ritual, and so often I don't think people understand what ritual is, but I know you have made a huge focus on that, because it focuses energy and creates a safe and a sacred space, wouldn't you say?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, ritual are basically, energetically, they are ways of creating mandalas of energy, of creating the four corners of the room, of calling the four directions, of calling the protectors, and of basically allowing the mind to quiet itself down, because it knows that now we are entering into a realm in which the soul and, in a way, the energy and the breath are primordial. And so they help us to focus. They help us to open our third eye between the two eyebrows, and which is the center of vision. They help us to have a clearer direction as to where we're going together. And they help us to feel safe also in opening up deeper.
I love how you explain things in a way that makes so much sense and actually makes me want to learn more about
this. Good. I'm glad about that.
Yes. So you have four more tips for couples. Do you want to share them, or do you want to just have people come to your workshop and find out for themselves?
Well, I can say that some of the other ones are about awakening the orgasmic response together and how to stimulate each other to a great orgasm, and about healing. That's very important, how to heal old wounds so we can flow with our energies, and about erotic devotion. And those are some of the ones I haven't talked about, but they're important.
So when is the date again of your program, and where?
It's November 12th to the 14th, 2004, in Santa Cruz, California.
Okay. And people can contact you through the link that will be on this radio program webpage. So we hope that people will definitely contact you and come to the workshop. And
They can go to www.margoanand.com.
Okay.
Or they can go to the Institute of Ecstatic Living.
Okay. Excellent. Well, I know our time is almost up, Margo, and I think there's one more question I'd like to ask you.
Yes.
And that is, if you had a message to give to everyone in our audience, people who are living their ordinary lives and living and loving as best they can, what would you say to them?
I would say that it's very important today in the world that we live in to have impeccable lives and to bring ourselves to focus on being an impeccable person in the way that we deal with each other. And that one of the most important things for me in my love life is to truly be able to have respect for my partner and to admire the way they behave and to know that I can count on them, that they are there for me, or that he's there for me and I'm there for him. And so for me, I find today that we have to remember that when we as a woman, as women, heal ourselves or do work on ourselves, we don't just do it for ourselves, but we do it for all the women in the world. And that when we, as men, work on our healing, that we don't do it just for me, the man, but we do it for all the men in the world. Because right now, there is a deep, deep oppression of women in the world. I just read an article on sexual slavery, and I was appalled to find out that there's 1 million young beings that are traded every year for sexual slavery, and it starts at the age of 4 years old.
So oh, my goodness.
Toddlers 4 years old and up are traded, you know, for to be used as sexual toys and then discarded once they've caught AIDS. And it's very, very bad. And so we need to be really conscious about the way we practice our sexuality and to really do it in as pure and loving way as possible. Men need to be able to listen to women, to awaken their inner feminine, to understand the flowing art of the woman, and women need to understand the strength of the masculine within themselves and how it can protect them as women also. And when the yin and the yang is awake in each of us, then we have a chance to move through our wounds and our difficulties more easily, I would say.
Well, I think you are doing such a wonderful service to all of us to balance that energy of yin and yang, male and female, and create more peace in our world. And I thank you for your work, and I thank you for your time on our show. And I look forward to our listeners sharing any questions they have, and hopefully you'll be able to come back with us and answer some questions and share more of your wisdom.
Thank you. Thank you so very much. Thank you. It was fantastic to talk with you, because there's nothing better than to be interviewed or to be sharing with someone who's an intelligent person who knows what you're talking about. Believe me, I've had enough of people that just were the pits. I mean, they were just, you know. So it's really a delight to be talking to
Margo.
A sister.
I
and a brother.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Join us next time for another Conversation with Margo Anand. Time.